Hi, everybody. Welcome to our Tanya class. Thank you. We have our notes right here if anyone wants. Maybe we could post them online after. Important to give credit where credit is due. This class is built off of listening to Rabbi Yossi Paltiel and Mrs. or Representative Sharna Ginsburg. And I also happen to also read the Alter Rebbe's text as well. But it's important to know what goes into making this class. And these notes are incredible. Sharna Ginsburg teaches a tiny class, and someone asked, the very first class we had, someone asked for notes on the class or something to just put her hands on. So I thought these were beautiful. And I'm so grateful that she gives this as a gift to the world. So here it is. Mrs. Wolf printed it out for us. So if you want something as a reference point for it, these notes are here for you. Today we are going to be finishing up Perek Gimel, Perek Beis, and diving into Perek Gimel of the Tanya. I'm going to give a really quick summary just in case anyone here is their first time in this class. This is a class on the Alter Rebbe's Tanya, the Baal Tanya's Tanya. The sefer that I'm working with is Lessons in Tanya, but there are so many versions of the Tanya, Likutei Emorim specifically. And the beginning of Likutei Emorim begins with the Alter Rebbe introducing that there's a really big problem, and that problem is that he is overloaded with the amount of people who need help with their Avodas Hashem, and how he can't really help every single person with their Avodas Hashem. So he sets out to write this sefer, which is going to help man, woman, and child, and work on themselves in order to serve God in the right way. And this is his focus. This is what he's writing the sefer for. Now, before he gets into even discussing Avoda and how to serve Hashem properly in the way that he describes, which is quoting this pasuk from the Chumash, which is Kikar velacha hadavra ma'ayd b'ficha u'bavavcha la'asaysay, which is in Devarim, where Moshe Rabbeinu is telling Bnei Yisrael that it is close to you to serve God. And when we say, what is close to you? How is it close to you to serve God, to do the mitzvahs every single day? There specifically, we're talking about serving God properly with your whole entire being, which means with love and fear. And the main question is, how is that possible? How is it possible to serve God with love and fear? How is this something that is considered close to you? And so, welcome. The Alter Rebbe starts off by saying, before we even begin to understand what Avoda looks like, we have to understand who we are. What are we? Who we are as people? What is our makeup? Let's first get really down to basics and understand the premise. We are people. We are human beings. We have struggle. And understanding where that struggle comes from. And then from there, at a certain point, we're going to get to Avoda. But for now, right now, we have to understand who we are as people. So the Alter Rebbe dives into Perek Aleph and Perek Beis in discussing the two neshamas that we have, the Nefesh HaBahamas and the Nefesh HaLukis. Last week, we discussed the Nefesh HaBahamas, and we saw that the Nefesh HaBahamas has a few different characteristics. The Nefesh HaBahamas is self-centered or selfish, self-gratifying. And again, we spoke about how that's not something that's necessarily bad. Now the Alter Rebbe takes terms like bad or evil and redefines them for us, because what we always think of as bad or evil or sinister, all of these words have connotation. And according to the Alter Rebbe, what is truth is really what reveals God and what conceals God. That's basically the premise for how to look at the world. If something reveals God, then it is holy and it's something we want to attach ourselves to. And if something conceals God, then that's something that is going to be pushing us away from living an aligned life with God's ideals in mind. So the Nefesh HaBahamas stems from this place, which the Alter Rebbe describes as Sitra Achra, or the Gimel Klipa Sitimaeus, and he basically explains the concept of this energy being something that conceals God. Of course, it still comes from Hashem, but it's from a space of concealment. And it also brings concealment, okay? So the Nefesh HaBahamas, again, it's not anything bad. It's just coming from a place of concealment of God, which means that its mode of operating is going to constantly be in a space of not seeing God. Right? So if you're functioning from space of the Nefesh HaBahamas, your first way of looking at the world is not going to be seeing God, because that's not clear. What you see is the mud, or you see the wealth, or you see just tangible objects. You're not going to see past that. The Nefesh HaLekis, the godly soul, is what introduces us to altruism, seeing something other than ourselves, seeing something outside of ourselves, and being able to trust God. Okay? The second characteristic of the Nefesh Bahamas that we were speaking about last time is anxiety. The concept that the Nefesh Bahamas, because it's short-sighted, because it only sees itself and what will gratify itself, it doesn't see anything above or beyond itself. So therefore, it's in a constant state of fear. Just like an animal is in a constant state of fear, how to survive, how to make its way in the world, how to make sure that the next meal is coming, store away the food, make sure that it's somewhere safe, make sure that I'm always in a place of safety. So that anxiety is a very prevalent concept that we live with always, because our Nefesh Bahamas comes from that space. It's experience. Its experience is one of anxiety. So it's an important thing for us to recognize about ourselves that a huge aspect of our lives, or our operating system, which is one of the operating systems that we have, the Nefesh Bahamas is one of those operating systems, is to be short-sighted, not to see God clearly, and also to be filled with fear constantly, because that's what the definition of the Nefesh Bahamas is. As opposed to the Nefesh HaLekis, because, as the Alter Rebbe describes, there's a part of the Nefesh HaLekis that is literally a part of God, where Hashem, it says, Atza nefachta bi, Hashem blew himself into me. He took of himself, of his innermost being, and he blew it into me. And the idea behind that is that there's a part of our neshama, our Nefesh HaLekis, that is one and the same with God. It is intrinsically connected with him. It is untouchable, unchangeable, immutable. And because of that, it has this constant recognition of God, because it doesn't feel disconnected. It is connected by definition to God. So anxiety doesn't come into play with that aspect of the Nefesh HaLekis, because it has a clear recognition of God. That part of our Nefesh HaLekis is called Yechida. It is inherently connected. And because of that, it's not experiencing anxiety. In fact, on the opposite, it's experiencing a constant state of bitachon. So that's a very different operating system, which is the Nefesh HaLekis. The Nefesh HaLekis, the godly soul, has a different way of looking at the world, of making our body move, think, act. Completely different operating system. What's important for you to know right now is what the Alter Rebbe is trying to bring to us is, before, up until now, you just thought you're a person and you make bad choices or good choices. And from those bad choices and good choices, you're either a tzaddik or a rasha. And it's almost like the Alter Rebbe is taking our very tunnel vision and like widening it to something so much more. There's not just the black and white, good, bad. There's not just evil and holy. There's two different operating systems. There's two different ways that we could tap into ourselves and how we operate and see the world. And there's not just good and evil. There's godly or what doesn't seem godly, but everything is godly. So it's very new. It's very different. And the Alter Rebbe is slowly easing his way into explaining to us what the Avodas Hashem is going to look like from here on in. But you could hear how many novel understandings of the human psyche, of how we think, how we operate, what a yid truly is, that the Alter Rebbe is bringing here. And again, I always think about how the Alter Rebbe on the first page says how he's getting this from other sources, and at the same time just reflects on his deep humility, because what the Alter Rebbe was really bringing to us was a lot of novelty that we did not understand or see in those sources that he's actually quoting. So very, very beautiful to constantly be aware of the novelty that's here, and also the humility that's here, which is so beautiful. So one person had a question last time, I believe, which is the difference between the Nefesh Bahamas and the Yetzer Hara. And it's a really good question, because oftentimes the two are used interchangeably, even amongst ourselves, right? Especially like when you're talking to a child, right? You're going to be speaking about the Yetzer Hara, not the Nefesh Bahamas. So what is the Nefesh Bahamas? What is the Yetzer Hara? How are they very different? So far we already spoke about what is the Nefesh HaBehemis and what are his tendencies, what are our characteristics, that limited mindset, the selfishness or the self-gratifying, and the anxiety. Those are characteristics of the Nefesh HaBehemis. It's also important to know that it's an operating system. It's also important to know that it's not bad. In many ways, the Nefesh HaBehemis can be harnessed for good, right? It's not a bad thing. It comes from Hashem as well. And all that it is an operating system. It's instinctual. It's animalistic. It doesn't mean that it's wrong. Now, what's important is, what is our Yetzirah? Yetzirah is not an operating system. It's an inclination. It's the part of ourselves that, the way I think of it as, is like the train tracks, right? So you have this one train track and then it splits. Now, what makes it that you go to this side or this side? There's that one tiny little bar that's connected to a lever in the train station. And when, you know, the operator literally pulls the bar, that's when that little track is able to move. And when that track moves, it directs where the train is going to go. Is the train going to go in this operating system, the Nefesh HaBehemis, or is it going to this operating system, the Nefesh HaBehemis? The lever, or that part of the track, they're both the same thing, that is the Yetzirah. That's what's convincing you where to go, where to direct yourself. The Nefesh, the Yetzirah, the Yetzirah type, are both inclinations. They're telling you what to do. They're each pulling you towards the operating system, but they're not the actual operating system. Okay? So what is that Yetzirah, to understand a little bit more of what that Yetzirah actually is? The Yetzirah is very much linked to our ego, right? So the part of ourselves that wants to feel like we are and nothing else matters. The Yetzirah creates our ego, because if we really were truly aligned with who we are, our ego would be nothing. Our ego would be intrinsically understanding that we are nothing other than God, right? We are just a part of Him. We are subsumed into Him and His greatness, and we are just reflections of Him, shadows of His greatness. Now, because we don't have that experience, because we're put into this very physical world, because we have a Nefesh HaBehemis, that our entire mission is to redirect the Nefesh HaBehemis to serve God, Hashem put all that darkness or shadow or layers in order for us to fulfill the mission that He wants us to fulfill. So now we have to construct an ego, something that's not the Nefesh HaBehemis, something else. That ego is very much linked to our Yetzirah. Yetzirah brings us to the Nefesh HaBehemis ego, which is, I need, I want, what will serve me, what makes me happy, what is my desire, right? So that is where the Yetzirah is constantly pulling us to. And again, there's nothing wrong with it, but it is something that conceals God or pushes us away from serving God. That makes sense? Okay. I just wanted to make sure that was kind of clarified from last week. And we all know, right? So like, our ego will only be as strong. I think this was a beautiful quote that she has over here. Our ego will only be as strong as our lack of awareness of our core identity, right? So the more we're not aligned with our Nefesh HaBehemis, the more strong our ego is, and which actually means the more fragile it is. Meaning, so if someone, give you an example to kind of bring that quote down. If someone insults you, right? If you have a really big ego, then you're going to be extremely insulted. As opposed to, if you're aligned with your true value, which is a godly value, who am I? I'm an untouchable part of God. Nothing can change me. Nothing can hurt me. Hashem is deeply a part of me. And if someone, you know, screams at you while they drive past you and cut you off, it's not like it's going to shake your day, because it's like, okay, it happens. You know, there's not that ego that's getting involved, because you deeply understand who you are as a person. I'm a Nefesh HaBehemis. If you have more of an ego, it's much more sensitive, much more fragile. And that could completely throw you off, because you're not immutable. You're not unchangeable. People can affect you, destroy your day, and it kind of, in ways, makes you more of a victim, which is really an interesting concept, right? So the bigger ego you have, the more of a victim you are to external circumstance or extraneous forces in your life, or even to yourself. And this is where the Altar Rebbe is going to bring us, how to veer away from ego and instead truly embrace the infinite value of our Nefesh HaLikus, okay, which is absolutely tremendous. So that was Perek Beis, and now we could move into Perek Gimel. Okay, this is where your notes are beginning. Let me make sure with you. Okay. So the Altar Rebbe starts by explaining that there are five different parts of the neshama. There's the nefesh, ruach, neshama, chaya, yechida. Five different parts of this neshama, five different levels of the neshama. Now, what's interesting is I asked some questions myself right before class, and I asked Rabbi Wolf, trying to understand, because I know the nefesh of Bahamas also has levels to the neshama. And Rabbi Wolf helped me understand. The yechida, which is the deepest part of the neshama, which is intrinsic and intrinsically connected to God, the Nefesh Bahamas does not have that level of connection to God, where it's one and the same with Hashem. It does have the four lower other levels of the Neshama. So the Nefesh, Ruach, Neshama, Chaya, those five different levels of Neshama, the Nefesh Bahamas has, and the Nefesh HaLikus has. Yeah. Very powerful. Yeah. So the Nefesh Bahamas has those aspects of its neshama, as the Nefesh HaLikus has it. So let's talk about what those are. What is nefesh? Yechid is only in the Nefesh HaLikus, and the Nefesh Bahamas has the four others as well. Nefesh, Ruach, Neshama, Chaya, but not Yechidah. Okay, so what are these five different levels of the neshama, and how do they express themselves? So nefesh is linked to action. Okay, so nefesh expresses itself in action. Ruach expresses itself in emotion. We're not going to go into how it ties in. I'm sure there's lots of Chassidus explaining why Ruach is emotion, but trust me, this is how they link up. Neshama expresses itself in intellect, and Chaya is above intellect. So it's super rational, super logical. Okay, and the Nefesh of Bahamas has that too. So again, nefesh is action, ruach is emotion, neshama is intellect, chaya is above intellect. So there are parts of our experience that are above intellect, super rational. How does that express itself? It expresses itself when, God forbid, someone, well, let's say for a good thing, a mother sees her child in danger and doesn't even act rationally, but does something that will endanger herself to save that child. Or will do something she doesn't even think is logically possible, like, you know, these stories of like a woman lifting up the car to save her child's actions that don't make sense. If anyone would stop her in between and say, hey, you can't actually do that, they wouldn't be hitting someone who's thinking or conducting themselves from a space of intellect. It's super rational. Now, how does that express itself in the Nefesh of Bahamas? So when someone is acting from, let's say, a self-gratifying place, or an anxiety-ridden place that is super rational. So for example, like let's say an addiction where you're being spurred by something that's not intellectual, but it's just you're being geared, you're being drawn towards something that you know will harm you, right? That's what an addiction is. It's coming from Chaya of the Nefesh Bahamas. It's self-gratifying, it's anxiety-ridden, and it's something that's not logical or intellectual. It's not emotional either. A lot of people clearly understand and see and feel bad about that addiction, right? The actions don't make sense, but still drawn towards that. So very important to understand that these levels of the neshama correspond very deeply to our everyday life. So what the Altar Rebbe is really doing here is, instead of taking this concept, which it does feel very high, and remote, not within reach, he's linking five different parts of the neshama to very, very practical, pragmatic aspects of your life. We are always taking action. We are always thinking. We are always feeling. These are things that are happening all the time. Understand and know that that is linked to your soul. So he's bridging the gap, right? Just like we were talking about last week, bridging the gap between the infinite and the spiritual and the very mundane physical part of our lives, where we don't feel God is in our lives. We don't feel like we see spirituality. And he's bridging the gap by showing you, no, you do feel it. You do this every day. This is where it's coming from. you didn't realize that when you're acting from an addictive place, that that's it's coming from your nefesh ha'bamis. You didn't realize that when you decide to do some sort of special act of chesed that totally didn't make sense in your day, that it's coming from your nefesh ha'kis. But now you know. And I want to talk to you about it so that you could understand it better and actualize it more effectively in your everyday life. Okay? So here in Paragimel, which is, I think, the shortest chapter in the Tanya, the Alter Rebbe starts explaining to us and really defining to us how the neshama relates to, how we can use the neshama to relate to the world, rather. And he describes 10 different spheres that the neshama has. And remember, the nefesh ha'bamis has these 10 different spheres, and the nefesh ha'kis has these 10 different spheres. And I feel bad because I had a board to show you, but I don't have it here with me. Does anyone know what the 10 different spheres look like? I'll just list them off for you, and then I'll bring it next time so you could see better. But why 10? Why are we talking about 10 different spheres, 10 different attributes through which the neshama expresses itself? Because it says that Hashem created the world with these 10 different attributes, and he expresses himself with these 10 different attributes. And because we are created b'tzelem elokim, because we are created in his form, the deeper understanding of his form is understanding these 10 different attributes, because this is the way that Hashem expresses himself into the world by creating the world, interacting with the world. So we too were created with these 10 different spheres, mimicking his 10 different spheres. Now here the Alter Rebbe is specific in saying the word shenishtashlu mehen, which means that they are drawn from his 10 different spheres. What's important to realize is it's not just that Hashem created us in his image, so we are a mirror image from him. What's incredibly powerful to remember and to understand is that we also have these 10 spheres, and we are drawing from his 10 spheres. So just like we look at our own neshama and we say, wow, there's a part of myself that is infinite. And from that infinite part of myself, I can use as a resource infinite ability, right? Infinite strength, infinite energy. There's a part of myself that is absolutely not limited, right? So, for example, if you want to take that concept and apply it to parenting, this is how I've heard Rabbi Chase Taub describe it. So one of his very first principles in his parenting class is understanding your infinite. Infinite ability. And if you really thought about it for just 1 second, you could tap into it, draw from there as a resource, and express it into your everyday life. So when the child is having a tantrum, instead of, you know, just being impulsive or being not rational, you could draw from either infinite energy or infinite patience or infinite intellectual skill to find out what it is that your child needs and how you are called upon right now to parent that child. So here with Alter Rebbe is bringing here, kind of like really drawing from that point and understanding it a little bit more deeply, when we're talking about the 10 spheres, and we're going to go into what they are, these 10 different attributes of God, not just do we have them to mimic him and to mirror how he has these attributes, but we're literally drawing from his infinite attributes. So when I have chesed and Hashem has chesed, it's not just I'm mirroring his chesed. I want to be kind like God is kind to us. I want to be generous like Hashem is generous to me. My generosity stems from his generosity. That's an incredibly powerful concept. When I am generous, it's coming from Hashem's generosity. It's infinite. It's much more powerful than just me. It's also not limited to my selfish motives or ulterior motives of, like, if I give her something, he'll give me something, right? What's that phrase? Like, if I rub his back, he'll rub my back kind of thing. That's not where it's coming from inside me. It's coming from true generosity, which is godly generosity. When I'm acting from a space of gevura, which means restraint or discipline, I'm acting from God's gevura. I could draw from his ability. Now I can make the choice, because I could either be drawing from my gevura from my nefesh ha'kis, or I could be drawing from my gevura from my nefesh ha'bamis. That's my choice. It's up to me which train tracks I'm going to be shifting onto. But let's just focus for now on the Nefesh HaLekes. What's tremendously empowering about this concept, just these two words of Shenishtal Shlumehen, that we draw our attributes from God's attributes, is that they're infinite. They're not limited to me, to my small ability. Let's say I feel like I'm the type of person who's absolute gevura. I have not a chesed bone in my body. I can draw from the fact that I have neshama, and of course I have chesed inside me. Not just do I have chesed that I could like fan the flame of, I have Hashem's chesed, who is the God of chesed, God of rachmim, God of mercy. And I could draw from there, bring it into myself and express it in the world, which is a tremendously empowering concept. Okay, so these 10 attributes, what are these 10 attributes? Why are they important? And how are we going to use this, God willing, in our Avodah? So the 10 attributes are split up into two different categories, mothers and doubles. The mothers are the intellectual properties, and what are called the doubles are these emotive attributes. They're emotional. Okay, so the first three are Chachma, Bina, and Das, which means wisdom, understanding, and knowledge. And again, these translations are fluid because the Hebrew language is so deep and basically comprises of so many different English words that we use that you can literally have like almost sometimes like 6 or 7 English words that are all within one Hebrew word. Even the Hebrew language itself, I think, is like something like 100,000 words, and the English language is up to 1,000,000, right? So it's just there's more words in the English language than Hebrew language. But of course, with Lashon HaKodesh, where there's godly intention in the actual language, so the actual letters, the way they're formulated, the way they're put together has intention and connotation and represents so much more than just the word. So for example, let's say Chachma. Chachma, the word. Technically, if you take apart the word wisdom is just wisdom. Maybe it stems from some sort of Latin meaning of wisdom. I'm not sure. But when it comes to Hebrew, every single word is put together with real wisdom. So Chachma, the word wisdom, is koachma, which means the power of what? The power of what means the power of potential. Chachma is not just wisdom, someone who is wise. It's a certain type of wisdom. It's a certain type of intellect, which is this seed of a thought. It's just that first grain of an idea. And everything that the idea has is contained in that one seed. So if I think, hey, I want to build a house. I want to build this house. And all I'm seeing is just like house. I don't necessarily see if the floors are going to be hardwood or marble. I don't see what type of doorknobs I'm going to be using or what type of faucets I'm going to choose when I create this house. I just see house. But in that seed of an idea, everything is contained. So that's the attribute of Chachma, where it's just a seed of a thought. It's wisdom, but everything is contained in it. So in the word itself, you could also see that kayachma, which means the potential. Chachma is potential. It's innovation. It's ideas. It's abundant thinking, abundant mindset. All of that is all contained in chachma. Bina is very different. Bina is understanding. It's fine tuning. It's breaking down the idea. It's creating structure to an idea. It's deeply contemplating something, pulling it apart, like threshing it all out. Very different way of thinking. Both of them are incredibly powerful. Das is really connecting with the subject, really connecting with the idea, thinking about ways how to implement that into your life. Not quite implementation, but thinking about how I can make this relevant to me. Where does this really pan out in my day? That's Das. All three of these are considered the imahis, the intellectual properties, attributes of God that we also have created in his image, that we draw from him and sustain in every single day of our life. So sometimes we're Chachma, we have these great ideas popping into our head. Sometimes we're Bina, where we have to thresh them out and try to really figure it out. Women tend to be much more Bina oriented, where we're structured a little bit more. We like to understand ideas a little bit more, but not to limit or stereotype men or women. But it is important to understand that certain ways are more masculine energies and certain ways are more feminine energies. Even within God, they're considered masculine energies of God or feminine energies of God. Okay, but we don't have to go into, I could literally talk about the spheres forever. Everyone has their own Perek in Tanya that like they resonate with. For me, Perek Gimel is, I guess, one of those. Okay, so these are the mothers. Then there are the children. They're only considered children because they derive from the mothers. Okay, so first there are the intellectual properties, and then from there are these emotional properties. What are they? There's chesed, which is kindness, generosity. There's gevura, which is restraint, strength, discipline. All very different words, but all contained inside gevura. Then there's teferes, there's the harmony. And then there's netzach, which is endurance, conquest, conquering. And then there's hayit, which is humility, splendor. Sounds like very different things, but you can see how they link. Maybe we can talk about it at a different time. Then there's yesaid, the foundation, and malchus, which is the kingship, or royalty, the grandeur. Now, what's important about all of these is we have every single one of them. All of these 10 spheres are something that we have, and they are the ways that the soul expresses itself. So important to understand, these two different souls are operating systems, right? They both have these 10 different spheres. How do they operate? What do they use to interact with the world? How do they express themselves? They express themselves with these 10 different spheres. Okay, and the more we understand ourselves and our operating systems, the more we could start trying to see, like, wait, where is this coming from inside me? When I have decided to do some sort of chesed, where is that coming from inside me? Is it coming from my nefesh elokis operating system or my nefesh bahamas operating system? Sounds like it's a great thing. I'm doing a mitzvah. I'm making a meal for somebody who's in need. I'm making a meal for a mother who just had a kid. Now, let's not take things out of context. What about I didn't make supper for myself or my kids, or I'm going to come half an hour late to pick up my kids because I'm busy doing this, you know, for somebody else. So bringing everything all together, is this coming from my nefesh elokis place, or is it coming from my nefesh bahamas part of myself? And it all matters. Like, the details really matter. Because if I was really coming from a nefesh elokis space, which is deeply understanding God in my life and the value that he brings me and my own value, understanding Hashem in this world, then I wouldn't be hurting somebody else's value or somebody else's nefesh elokis, because I'm in a space of acknowledging God in this world. So if I'm really operating from that system, then it shouldn't hurt someone in the end. So it's really important to keep in mind, like, where is this really coming from? Is it coming from me that I just need to do chesed? Or is it coming from a deep understanding of God and what am I called upon to do for him in this world? We're going to get to it soon in Perek Tes when we talk about the war. But that's an important thing to just bring up. Any questions so far? Yes.
Who's the one who's deciding? Who's the gatekeeper? Who says yes, no? Chart.
Really, really good question. We're actually going to get to it soon. But what really helps us decide, and this is what the Alter Rebbe is going to appeal to, and this is what a lot of Hasidus talks about, that's why it's called Chabad Hasidus, is the intellectual faculties. So there's a concept of Nefesh HaSiklus, which is basically our intellect. And that's what's going to help us decide where to operate from. Yeah?
Thanks.
No. No, no, no. That wouldn't be ego. I mean, it could be coming from a space of ego, right? So if I am deciding to do certain things, meaning ultimately Yetzirah, Yetzer Taiva, those inclinations that are deciding where you're going from. How to use or to navigate your operating systems would be to use your nefesh HaSichlus. But both of them have a lot of power and have a lot of sway. Yeah. Okay. Any other questions? Okay. So, like intellectual. Yeah? Okay, so I want to just do something really quickly here, because we're talking about ideas, and the whole point of the Tanya, the reason why the Alter Rebbe wrote this Tanya is in order for us to implement this in our Avodah. Now, we haven't yet started speaking about what our Avodas Hashem is and how we're supposed to be looking for our own personal Avodah yet in the Tanya. But even so, even already, you could start taking these concepts and making them really practical, which is interesting because you would be doing exactly what we're talking about here in Parak Gimel. So with this information of us having intellectual attributes and emotional attributes, you could already start implementing an Avodah or a different approach towards our everyday life. So for example, with the idea that our emotions are born from our intellect, just knowing that idea can help you navigate your emotions. So for example, if you're feeling really stimulated by something, triggered by something, angered, hurt, those are emotions. That means that it's coming from somewhere. So then you could use your intellect to think about where are these emotions coming from? Why am I getting triggered? What is hurting me? What is chipping away at my value? Why am I feeling upset? Why am I feeling angered? And use your intellect to start exploring that, right? So because everything really comes from those, all of your emotions, which is your very real experience. I'm not downplaying how incredibly powerful it is to look at your emotions and sit with your emotions and work through them. What's also important is not just sit with them. You have to also know where is it coming from, right? So I'll give you, let's say, a personal example. I share this in my workshop. One time my daughter came into the kitchen and it was on a regular day. And she asked me, she came in not just in her uniform. And this was a regular school day. It was a Friday. And I said, why are you not wearing your uniform? And she says, you don't remember we're supposed to have special mom and daughter time today. And she was basically trying to get out of school, which is natural, right? Every child wants to get out of school just for no reason, just because, right? But for me, I had like this experience of just crumbling. That's how I explain it. Like I felt crumbling inside me. And it didn't match up. Like she said something, why am I crumbling? Like what is happening over here? So I just told her to get back dressed into her uniform. And then I started thinking about why am I feeling this way? Why did that affect me so deeply? And I realized that there's a part of me that believes that if my child is asking for more time with me, it means that I don't give enough time to my child. I'm not being a good enough mother. I'm not giving that emotional connection that this child deeply needs to feel stable and loved and supported and to feel like her core identity is validated. And if she's asking for it, it means I'm not doing a good enough job. So all she said was she wants to get out of school because why not? That's fun. Why not always push the limits, push the envelope? And what I heard was, you're a terrible mother. You're not doing enough as a parent. The purpose in this world is to bring these neshames and foster them, care for them, bring them to Yiddishkeit. You're not doing enough, right? Totally different experiences over here. But what's important to realize is that I had an emotional reaction. What caused that emotional reaction? It's my thinking. It's my way of looking at myself. She didn't say you're not a good mother. I said I'm not a good mother. I told that to myself in her words. And it's so important to hear that, because what did that create? That created my experience, my thoughts, what I'm telling myself literally created the way I was going to respond to her, the way I was going to respond to the rest of my day. So if I would have let it go and just felt triggered for the rest of the day, who knows the damage I might have inflicted on the rest of my world, right? Everything else could have just gone off for the rest of that day. But instead, here the Alter Rebbe is giving us such a powerful tool just with explaining who we are and our makeup. Your emotions are not you. Even your thoughts are not you, but they do shape your reality. Who you really are is a nefesh elokis, is yechida. Your intrinsic self is part of God. It's not your experience. You don't feel that way. There's lots of different pieces of why you don't feel that way. So the Alter Rebbe is making it really practical. Like, again, bridging the gap between Yechida and my real experience. He's bridging you. He's bringing you together. Know that this is who you are. And let me explain to you why you don't feel that way. Let me explain to you what your experience is shaped by. It's shaped by your emotions, your perspectives, your feelings, your beliefs. Those things are going to make your reality and keep recreating your reality. Just like my day would have looked differently if I didn't start backpedaling to what my thoughts are. Right? So it's such an empowering thing to learn. And it's also a huge responsibility to learn this concept. Like, where am I going to direct my day? It's very much shaped on, where am I aligning myself? Am I aligning myself with just my emotions? Am I aligning myself with just my ruach, part of my neshama? Am I aligning myself with something higher than that? Am I aligning myself with my intellect? Where can I find myself and actually unify my entire experience and reflect who I truly am, which is I'm a godly soul. And I want to function from that space, deeply understanding how I'm a godly soul. So how can I take this really big idea of my soul being a makeup of 10 different attributes, 3 being intellectual, 7 being emotional, and how can I take that concept and apply it to my life? That's something we want to walk away from, because everything that we learn in Tanya is something there for us to learn. So how can I make even just this concept practical? How is this idea going to shape my reality, change the way I look at other people, change the way I look at myself, at my day? Can I take this idea and relate it or translate it into a problem that I'm currently experiencing right now? Something that I'm struggling with. I'm struggling with a person in my life, or I'm struggling with just circumstance that's happening right now. Can I take this idea and translate it into that part of my life? Because that's the whole point. If I think about this idea every day, would that change me as a person? If I constantly thought about whom I am as a person, my intrinsic value as a godly soul, or if I constantly thought about, I don't want to limit myself to my emotions. I'm so much more than that. Or if I constantly thought about, hey, my emotions are not me, I could actually find out what's creating them. And if I listen into my thoughts, then I could find out what's shaping my reality and my perspective and my outlook on life. So if I operated from these ideas, how would I show up differently in, let's say, my job? How would I show up differently as a wife, as a mother, as a daughter? Right? So it's really important to like ask yourself these questions. Like, how can I take these ideas, which are lofty, really lofty, but what the Ra'al Tzareb is doing here is trying to bridge the gap. But again, we need Das with this idea. Das is really connecting with the idea. Fine, we heard about this. We learned about it. Such a cool idea. I'm inspired. I can even understand it. But now Das is, how can I make this real in my life? Where does this apply? Take this lofty concept and really make it practical. Can anyone think of a way that this idea could show up as practical? Oh, can I pause it? Pause. Yeah, pause button. It's like live stream. No, I have to end it. Okay, so that was the lesson. And now if you want to be a part of the dark and dirty of our class, then come in physical to our class so we could discuss this. Thank you all for being here.